I found this story yesterday really interesting. Kind of took me back to a couple of years that we had the show in the 30-year history, where that year there was a lot of talk about the Metroplex hosting the Olympics. Remember, there was a Dallas 2020 bid, or
yeah.
There have been a couple of different bids over the years, and we would do segments on this show. Well, where would we host everything? Where would basketball be housed? Would it be at the American Airlines Center or Dickies Arena? Would we put volleyball at the Super Pit in Denton? Where would we do rowing? Could we clean up the Trinity or White Rock? And it was a lot of fun trying to figure out where to host an Olympiad in North Texas and how we would do it with all of our stadiums and arenas. Well, yesterday, the Dallas City Council was briefed by city leaders about the World Cup coming to town in 2026. Still a couple of years away, but this is such a big event. It's the world's biggest sporting event. As it was described yesterday in this meeting, it's the Super Bowl on steroids.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hosted by North America, Canada, United States, and Mexico. But as we found out recently, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, AT&T Stadium specifically, will host 9 World Cup matches, more than any other venue in the tournament. A semifinal match, a round of 16 match, 2 round of 32 matches, and 5 group stage matches. So there's going to be a lot of activity here. So the city is trying to get ready for it, and the whole DFW area is trying to get ready for it. So this special meeting talked about attendance projections, economic impact, and where the athletes will live, where they will practice, and I thought all of this was interesting. According to their projections, 4 matches will bring about $415 million in revenue to the area. They are still working on projections for 9 matches, but if 4 matches are bringing about $400 million, wouldn't 9 matches bring about $1 billion to the area?
Yeah.
Wow. Which is a ton.
It's a big impact.
They expect millions of visitors to Dallas-Fort Worth. They say that, especially if we get the International Media Center, which that has still not been determined.
We had that in 94, right?
Yes, had it in 94. I think it's likely that we will host it again. They say that would be housed at the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center in downtown Dallas. And what that alone would mean to money brought in, visitors, people working the event, hotel rooms, just the media, they say, if it's housed here, the number of hotel rooms they would need for that month would be huge.
And that's quite an operation. That's not only those journalists who are covering the games, that's them also doing the games from a remote location, right?
Isn't right.
That where they put all the like broadcasts?
Yes.
Wow.
There's going to be a fan fest, FIFA Fan Fest.
Yes.
We've talked a lot about fan fests over the years here on the station. We had the first one when the All-Star game was at the ballpark back in 95, was that?
Yeah, I think so.
And we had a promotions guy who was obsessed with fan fest.
Got fan fest tickets. Go ahead, Gordo. This is your chance
to
do it.
He was not obsessed with it. He was trying to give away tickets to it.
And how did it sound?
All right, we're going to give him some fan fest tickets.
They said yesterday in this meeting that over the 34 days that Dallas will host one of the FIFA Fan Fest locations, they expect millions just to show up for Fan Fest.
Wow.
And they say it's going to be similar to drawing what Fair Park sees during the State Fair of Texas every year. That many fans. They say the World Cup in Qatar in 2022, their Fan Fest averaged 70,000 a day.
Jeez, okay.
And the largest daily attendance was right at 100,000. So they think that'll bring, just FanFest will bring 2.5 million people to DFW over the course of that month.
That's almost like a game a day if you're drawing 70,000 people
yeah.
to that thing.
I thought this was interesting. the venues for all the teams and the practices. Of course, the games will be at AT&T Stadium. The base camps, and of course, we won't know which teams are, you know, occupying these dorms and practice facilities until the event. But the base camps are going to be at Dallas Baptist University.
DBU.
I guess using their dorms.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, I guess they have a soccer stadium there or field.
Yeah, women's soccer. Yeah.
Toyota Stadium, the University of Dallas, and TCU. There will also be training venues. The teams will also work out at SMU and the Cotton Bowl. So it sounds like they will live at the University of Dallas and Dallas Baptist, train at Toyota Stadium, Cotton Bowl, SMU, and maybe live and train at TCU.
And they'll probably be amazed at all of the fields and facilities we have in this huge area mm-hmm. of ours. The Metroplex is so big.
Yeah. I don't think I mentioned that the Fan Fest is going to be at Fair Park.
Okay. That's great for Fair Park.
Yeah. So if it's big enough without the International Broadcast Center, if we get the International Broadcast Center, then that's just even more people. The city, understandably, is worried about logistics and transportation, mass transit,
yeah, we
security.
Can't really just get on a train and go over to the game.
Yeah, they're talking about the nearest train that you can take to AT&T Stadium ends up at Center Point or Center Port, which I think is north of there.
Yeah.
About like 5 or 6 miles. So they're talking about having to get all those people from that location down to the stadium. So think about everything they've got to consider in terms of logistics and busing and trains.
Oh, man, that's a lot.
And our police force is going to be doing time and a half. Our security forces, they're going to have to hire a bunch of people just to secure one of these locations.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about these athletes living in dorms at Dallas Baptist and TCU and UD and having to secure all of those locations, what a massive undertaking.
Do they have to get like federal help for something like that? Department of Security and all that? I would international play
maybe.
Like that, I would think you would.
Yeah, maybe. And I'm sure there's a lot of local money that goes into this. I'm sure FIFA pays for some of it. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know.
Maybe if you're
works.
Awarded the rights, you pay for everything.
You got to pay for it.
So it's really, really interesting what's going to be coming to town here. That's going to be a wild 34 days.
When it was here in 94, we went to that game at the Cotton Bowl, and it was, I'm not a huge soccer fan, still not any more of one now than I was then, but that was a great experience. As a sports fan, if you have a chance to go to one of the games, then it may be pretty difficult to go, but it was really cool.
It was. It was great. And I recall that day the Cotton Bowl wasn't sold out. I remember a bunch of empty seats behind us.
Yeah.
I would guess these days all of these matches will be sold out.
I would think so.
Can't imagine there'd be an empty seat at AT&T Stadium for a World Cup match, even round of 32.
No. And I remember being really hot, but you won't have that problem at AT&T.
Right.
You'll have the AC blowing. It blows cold.
As I was going down the soccer rabbit hole on this yesterday, I also noticed that the Dallas Cup is currently underway. That's the biggest international youth soccer tournament really in the world, certainly in the United States and really in the world. All the big clubs from all around the world come to the Dallas Cup. And this has been around for a long time. And I've got a history with the Dallas Cup. It started back in 1980. And right around 1990, I got looped into the Dallas Cup broadcasts, which were on ESPN and ESPN International. And this was because at our old job, when George and I worked at KRLD Radio, we worked with Craig Way, now the voice of the Longhorns. And Craig was a part of this Dallas Cup broadcast, but he couldn't do it for a couple of years in a row, so he suggested me. And so all I had to do was sideline reporting. I knew nothing and kind of still know nothing about soccer. But it was a gig on TV and on ESPN, so I said, sure, I'll do it. I'll figure it out.
Why not?
So the first year I had to do it, I learned all, you know, the teams and the players, and talked to the producer about what they wanted. And Craig kind of told me, you just do this, they'll throw it to you four times a game. You just talk about how hot it is down there or what you see on the bench or something like that.
Did you ever have a, there he is, he's having the time of his life moment?
Oh, I'm sure I did.
There's
no doubt.
The time of his life.
There is no doubt I did. Because I was scared to death, which you know, made me prepare to not be a fool, although I'm sure I still sounded like one. Well, that first year, I'm all set to do my two reports each half from the sideline. And this game is being broadcast on ESPN2, I think, and ESPN International. And the play-by-play guy was John Paul Della Camera. If you're a soccer fan, you know that name.
Seasoned veteran,
legendary play-by-play guy. 45 minutes before the broadcast started and the game started, they called me upstairs. I can't remember who the color commentator was. It was some ex-player. And they said, can you do play-by-play? And I said, well, I've done, you know, high school football, high school basketball, done a little college here and there, but I've never done a soccer match. And they said, well, John Paul has laryngitis. He can't speak. And you're the only other guy on our crew that is a broadcaster that may have done play-by-play. Do you think you could do it? And I said, sure, I can do this. So the producer is giving me a crash course in the two teams and some of the terminology in this, and I'm sitting in John Paul Delacamera's chair in the press box at Wildcat Ram Stadium. That's where this was.
You've got to be sweating bullets.
And the color guy next to me is trying to help me. And they said, okay, let's do a run-through for the open. So I've got the headset on, the mic, the players and, you know, lineups, rosters in front of me. And, you know, you're going to welcome them to Wildcat Ram Stadium, and you're going to talk about the two teams and throw it to Johnny, your color commentator, and he'll fill in the rest. So we start, and they roll the open, and the ESPN International graphics. Dun, 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 the soccer ball rotating around the world, and the ESPN International graphic came up, and at that moment it dawned on me, they are listening to me around the world.
Don't look down.
This is the number one sport in the world that everybody knows really well, and you're going to be telling them about it, and you don't know anything about it. And that's when I started sweating. And we went through the open, and I'm sure I stumbled through it. And then now it's 5 minutes to air. And I'm thinking, this is going to be the biggest broadcast disaster in the history of sports broadcasting. And it's at that moment that I felt a hand on my shoulder tapping me, and I turned around, and it was John Paul Della Camera, and he said, I think I'm okay. I think I can do this.
Yeah, you sound great. Yeah.
He had been...
You're 100%. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Great. Here. I got a seat warm for you. You want a coffee?
You should have seen how fast I gave up the headset to him. And he had been just, you know, pounding tea and lozenges, and he actually ended up... He was definitely hoarse, but he ended up doing the game. And I think it's because producers went to him after we did that run-through and said, you have got to get in
there.
We
have no chance
here. We cannot let this guy do an entire game. He couldn't even do the open.
Was it as fast as you running out of Market Hall on Friday?
It may be, but I guarantee you that's what happened. The producers went to John Paul and said, whatever you do, I don't care how bad you sound, you got to sit in that chair.
Gosh, I wish you would have made the call that day.
I'm so thankful I didn't.
Maybe we could have had plenty of bicycle kicks for those boys or something. A
couple bicycle kicks for those boys.
And Real Madrid makes a basket there. So, yes, thankfully, that did not come to pass.
What if you would have done it and just ripped it and, like, had a signature goal call and everyone from around the world would have fallen in love with you? This guy is, like, the greatest soccer play-by-play guy ever.
Well, the good thing about it, that was, you know, right around 1990. I would not have gone viral because there was no internet. So thank God for that.
You've been safe.
But I'm glad it worked out the way it did. So anytime I see the term International Broadcast Center, like I did yesterday during that World Cup story, that's what I think of.
You feel a need to smoke.
Yeah. Dallas Cup, though, a great, great event. And they did actually have me back the next year or two to do sidelines.
You were, see, you did good. You were a staple.
They were okay with me only having 30 seconds of broadcast, but not 2 hours.